Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
You know what? I just saw the volume for that whole thing just drop, and when people complain they can't hear a damn thing on the podcast, it's your fault. Alan.
Trust me, they'll be able to hear that.
It was
here we
fault.
Are, man. What is this, episode 120?
Six.
The number of the beast. Hell and fire was born to be released.
I'm glad I got everybody like riled up here with like metal or something. I don't know why.
We have the power.
Link, you still there?
I'm still here. I'm just laughing along with the rest of the audience.
Might want to bump that up a little bit. So
the hijinks that we call the tech show.
Link, man, you're missing. We've got our shirts, our official TLLTS shirts that we're going to wear.
Yeah, you're wearing them?
No.
No.
Nobody tried them on yet? No modelers?
I tried to convince Alan to put on the denim shirt, but he didn't want to go for it.
Well, I don't want to unpack it yet. I'll never get it back into the package.
And Dan just threw it in the corner, so it'll stay there until about...
No, you guys should put one on real quick and then snap a picture and stick it up on the website.
Dan?
I don't have
man. Show people
running.
What we got going on.
Yeah, Dan doesn't have the webcam working.
I don't have
Give
the webcam working.
No. You don't have to have the webcam working. Just take a picture of it. And
take
put
a picture.
It
it'll last
on
longer.
On the website, yeah.
Why don't you go to the website that you ordered it from?
Because I can't take
copy
a picture
of the shirt
superimpose
and put it up
it's
there.
It's not going to have the logo, though.
So. Can't take a picture of having it up for me because I don't have the
You want to see the fine stitching quality of the logo.
Is my camera over there, Alan?
Yeah, I want to see the logo.
Where would it be if I was going to find it?
In a pile of junk, like everything else in that room, if you're going to find it.
Is there batteries in it?
Probably not.
Pretty
evil.
It
feels awful light.
There's batteries right in front of you. You can put batteries in.
Well, you guys
pull the flash card out of the flash reader right there behind your laptop. Stick it in there. Snap a picture. Make happy boy. Well, stick it back in the flash reader. I'll mount it.
You guys got something over there that's beeping?
No. Why, do you hear beeping noises?
Apparently it's something over here that's beeping then.
Go ahead, talk for a few minutes.
Sure, I can talk.
I got some stuff I want to hit, but go ahead.
I started working on a lamp project at work. Basically what happened was we had this is an old project from like 5-6 years ago, where we had a Microsoft Access table. And this thing was being used like literally like 5-6 years ago and it kind of died. And recently we got a call saying they wanted to start up using this thing again. So we pulled it into Access 2002 and all the scripts and shit that we had coded in there were completely gone. You're still able to run them, but we couldn't edit them. You couldn't pull them into the editor. So I talked to my boss and I said, you know, this is bullshit. Let's try using a LAMP solution. I can create a prototype fairly quickly. Get it up and running. We'll show the business users, and then if they say go for it, we'll go bonkers with it. So he agreed. So I'm working on creating the prototype. I'm about halfway done with the prototype, and I used some tools to create a MySQL database, and I had posted some questions on the bulletin board. The best ones that I saw is MySQL Administrator, which is a really nice GUI. From people from MySQL. This lets you create users. It creates tables, grant users access,
spaghetti.
Update the table access. Real nice, real easy to use. They also have the MySQL query browser, so you can go in and set up some pre-selected queries on your tables. You could store them. And then they also have a migration toolkit. Now, the migration toolkit is if you want to convert other databases, such as like Oracle, DB2, Access, whatever you want to convert it to. And I didn't use that one, but I was just checking that out. I really need to do that because I was creating a table from scratch. now that I had a table created, I asked, I posted on the bulletin board, and Link suggested I check out TurboDB Admin, which is a real nice PHP editor for databases. You just go to the website, you download it, and you just drop it into your www directory, and it's up and running real easy. You can go in, you can connect to your databases, pull up the different databases. You can go in and create rows, entries. You can edit the values. Real simple, straightforward. So I got my table all coded up with some test records.
Your picture has been served.
And I just started coding up the PHP scripts, and Link actually helped me out on a couple of things. I had some questions, and he was helping me out. And it's coming along, so hopefully I should have
Because Link is the dude.
You are the PHP master, Link. So I should hopefully have the prototype done by, like, middle of next week, and then I'll go to the users, and hopefully they say, yes, go for it. And then I got to go beat the Unix admins in my company to let me set up a Linux box with Apache and MySQL running on it. I mean, yeah, we could run it on a Unix install, but I want to do Linux, man.
Yeah.
So those tools are real great. I have a post on my blog about it. You can check out these great tools, the ones from MySQL, as well as the TurboDB admin tool, which is real nice. Link suggested that one. That's a real nice one. You can also use...
I saw that when it came through, maybe it was a dig post or something like that. Months and months ago, when it was still at a 1 or a 0.01 something stage, and really, really early in the development, it was just called, it didn't have the DB in the name at that time.
It's real easy, man. You don't have to install any packages. You just download the zip
file.
Yeah,
it's all like a PHP script and Ajax.
Yep, it's real nice.
It's just slick as hell, man. It keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, I tried connecting with OpenOffice Base. Supposedly, you're able to go and connect to a MySQL database if you use the ODBC drivers. I did that. I installed it. I was able to connect it to my database through OpenOffice Base, but I couldn't actually go into the records and edit them. Apparently, there was some kind of bug. And I think it was JZA. He suggested using the JDBC drivers to try to get that working.
Uh-huh.
But I don't need to because I got that other tool that you suggested. So, and the other one he suggested, I think, was PHP Admin, Web Admin.
Right.
Hey, have you played with that one at all?
PHP Admin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
PHP My
Admin. Oh, dude, I love that. I use it all the time.
What do you like better? Do you like that one or do you like the Turbo one better?
I like PHP Admin better because it's faster. However, the Turbo Admin, Turbo DB Admin, is really, really pretty. You know what I mean?
It's real simple to set up. All you got to do is drop it into your web server directory, and it's up and running.
Yep.
Good stuff, man. So I'm playing around with PHP and getting into that. So hopefully they like what I do for them, and they say, go with the project, man. I'm actually having some fun at work for once.
Anything is better than Access.
Access is such a piece of shit.
And I mean that anything. You know what I mean?
Well,
anything at all.
The whole thing is this is going to be something that's going to be accessed by outside clients. So why the hell should we force them to buy a Microsoft product that they might not have in the first place? A web-based solution, all you need is a web browser and it works and a password.
Sure. Sure, and if you code it up well, they can use any web browser and it'll never be a problem for them. You know, it'll just work.
And if later on we want to code up a separate, standalone application on the desktop, we could do that. You can code it in whatever freaking language you want to code it in. Good stuff, man. So I'm getting into it. The MySQL tool set is real nice. Have any of you guys used those things? The MySQL administrator, the query browser, and the migration tool.
Now, see, I don't usually use that. In all actuality, I really don't use PHP Admin or Turbo Admin very much either, because I mostly do my coding in, all my LAMP coding is done in VI or Vim, and I just kind of roll right along and test it out in a browser as I go,
The stuff from MySQL is real nice, man. Really, really pretty to look at, nice and easy to use. Really robust. You can do it across the network remotely. on your local machine. It's all the same. It's real nice.
I just think it's faster with the terminal open and the MySQL command prompt.
Yeah, you could do that. But if you know, the reason why I wanted something GUI based is I'm just coding up some test records quick and dirty, you know. Mm-hmm. And I need to just go in there and, you know, go in and change values here and there for each record. So it worked pretty well, man. So now I'm working on the coding the application. So what else is going on? Dan, you got a picture up of your shirt up there or what?
No, I'm getting there.
It's real nice, man. The stitching's
such a freaking slowpoke, man.
Yeah.
The stitching's real nice quality.
Damn it, Dan.
What are you gonna do?
I'll tell you what I did today. Go ahead, Alan. On a side note, I think I fixed
some of our sound over here. So hopefully it's sounding a little bit better for everybody.
What'd you do?
Yeah, they were saying that I was a little low.
The expander was like full on. Like everything was full on it. So that's why we were sounding like we were talking outside of a bunch of tin cans. So hopefully it's a little bit better sounding now. Also, the volume came up, so your levels are going to be a little bit better over there, Dan. You'll have these things.
I mentioned in my weblog earlier, was it this week that I was talking about? But this week I was talking there, or late last week, about me getting a wireless mouse and trying that out under Linux. And I really dig it. It's pretty cool. Cheap. You know, a cheapo wireless mouse that I found at Circuit City. And today I happened to be strolling past Radio Shack, and I saw a wireless mouse and keyboard combination real cheap on sale. So, of course, I had to pick that up and check it out. And really, it's not bad. It's not bad other than the fact that I don't think the mouse is very ergonomic, and I'm not really sure I like the layout of the keyboard. But it works really good, you know?
Now, is this USB link or is this PS2?
Well, the first one that I got, the Micro Innovations, just the wireless mouse, that is PS2. However, I think they make a USB one as well. The ones that I picked up today, the mouse and keyboard combination, is USB. So I wanted to make sure I tried it, you know, both ways. So I got the USB one today and tried it. And the coolest thing is, and I haven't tried it on Slackware yet to know if it's going to work on there, but the coolest thing is that plugging this into an Ubuntu box is it just, like, starts working, you know? You just plug the damn thing in. My computer was all up and everything. I just plugged it in and, you know, started typing away and doing my thing, and it was up and going. It's really neat.
I have a wireless keyboard mouse combination for when I built my Myth TV box. Mm-hmm. And that one's PS2 based, and that works with whatever. There's absolutely no drivers needed at all. It's all driven by the transmitter box that's plugged into the PS2 port.
Mm-hmm. See, now, it must be a holdover from Windows, because I figured for sure that this was going to be a hassle getting these things working, because I remember installing a wireless keyboard and mouse combination for a client back a couple of years ago, maybe, and it was a all day affair, fighting with drivers and all kinds of other crap, you know what I mean? On Windows, and this was Windows 98 maybe or something like that. It was just a horrible thing. I you know, had to beat on it all day long to get the frickin' stuff to work. And then sometimes, you know, it would, like, lose sync or whatever and just didn't want to work right, and the mouse was shaky.
Or the battery's dead whenever you want to use it.
Yeah, this was just plug right in, and it worked. And this whole set right here, you go to Radio Shack, and it's the compact, slim, wireless keyboard and mouse set, and they're on sale right now for $30, which is not bad. And the mouse part of it actually is rechargeable. You can put it in a little base station thingy, and they give you a set of rechargeable batteries. You can recharge the batteries, and you know. So I figured, what the hell, that wasn't a bad deal. And I'll tell you what, man, I was really impressed putting this thing on Linux as opposed to Windows. It just runs. Plug it in, it goes.
Is it better than a wired mouse?
I haven't tried the USBs. About the same. The resolution that I'm finding as I look at some of these things, that they're about 800 DPI on the wireless mice. And I think that the wired mice are a little bit finer than that, 1,000 or maybe 1,200, probably 1,000, because you notice that the wired mice will move a little slower across your screen, you know? But it's not bad. I mean, you know, you easily get used to what it is that you're doing and goes right along. It doesn't, it's not jumpy or, you know, finicky or flaky or anything like that, so... Pretty cool. But I was going to say, the PS2 one, I did try on Slackware. I see people are asking about if the wired, if the wireless stuff will work on Slackware. Yeah, it does. I haven't tried the USB one on there yet, but I pull up my Slackware laptop over here and plug the PS2 Micro Innovations mouse in it, and it just came right up and worked. It's a beautiful thing.
Sweetness.
Dan is leaving us.
Ooh, I see the pictures of the shirt now. Nice.
Pretty cool, huh?
Nice.
Nice stitch work, man. We got this from a company down in North Carolina. They did a pretty good turnaround. Took them maybe, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks, something like that, to send it out to us. So these are the shirts that we're going to be wearing at the Linux Expo.
Except mine is blue.
Yeah, Alan has to be different. He's got a denim shirt that he's going to wear. So it'll be the three.
Well, this is these are the shirts that we'll be wearing at one point during the time.
Yes,
I'm not going to wear mine every day.
It's going to get kind of rancid after 3 days.
Yeah.
I'm the cool one.
You mean we're not going to the laundromat every night?
No. I've got three different shirts that I'm going to whip out every day.
You're going to whip out your shirts.
I'm going to be wearing some tech show attire, but it won't be that same shirt every day.
I expect to get a shirt from the Microsoft booth there this year.
Oh, are they going to be there?
I can wear that. The Microsoft services for Unix.
Have they updated that like in 4 or 5 years since the last time they did it?
Yeah, the next version that's coming out is called Vista. Vista Ultimate.
Did you guys see that article that Stephen Vaught Nichols wrote? Why Vista will suck?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good, man. He's spot on as usual. Gotta love his stuff, man. And he also had a good article talking to Michael Dell. Did you see that one?
Nope.
And that one, he says that Michael Dell said this, that they're targeting a specific, you know, market for the Linux installs, and that he doesn't care what Microsoft thinks, whether or not they install Linux on their machines or not. And it sounds like he's targeting more the workstation power user, like, you know, engineering types, rather than the home user.
I got a little bit of a story regarding that. Yesterday, I had the privilege of sitting through a Novell demonstration of their new products. Actually, the Novell's Enterprise Server, Open Enterprise Server, my mistake, which is the Novell Directory Services, Novell Printing Services, all of Novell's line that's currently running on NetWare operating system has been ported over to running on top of SUSE. And there's been a concern, because I work in a school district, and there's been a concern amongst a number of the school districts in the area that are running Novell, that now that Novell has migrated to a Linux platform, what does that mean for them? What does that mean for the future of Novell? They were wondering, you know, is this the time to make the jump from Novell and go maybe to Microsoft or whatever? Because they were a little concerned about the Linux platform. So they had this seminar. The guy did a half a day. And he did a really great job. He did. He came in and he walked through all the projects. He talked about, you know, what it means, why Novell chose to move over to the Linux platform. And essentially, it boils down to you're getting the same stuff that you currently have on a just running on top of Linux as opposed to the NetWare operating system. And you're going to get, in addition to the stability and the security of the NetWare operating system, you're going to get the flexibility and the cost benefits associated with Linux on top of it. And he talked a little bit about the history of Linux. He talked about the history of Novell and the choice that they moved, why they moved to Linux. And then he went through and demonstrated the services that are running and the management tools and saying, hey, you know, when it comes down to it, there's not much of a difference. It was a really great presentation. What was interesting, though, It was hosted, but it was not hosted by Novell. Novell was a guy in there. It was hosted by Dell. Dell was they had a Dell representative in there who was saying, you know, all these servers. They were talking about workstations too. They didn't go into too much detail about running SUSE Linux workstation as a client. The Dell didn't, but they were there, right there, right next to the guy saying, you know, we're there all the way supporting Linux. So it was pretty interesting to see. Anyway, the guy, he almost got himself into hot water because they had sent out a bunch of questions. You know, they sent out a request for questions a couple weeks beforehand. And one of my questions for the guy was, are you going to be able to do user eDirector user management on a command line? You know, because I find it faster to use a command line in a lot of cases. Would I be able to add users to groups, remove users, change passwords from the command line? And that question came up really early in the demonstration. And when he brought up showing the Novell environment, he kind of started to go right to the command line. And he started talking about how you can do a lot of this stuff on the command line, showing different commands on a command line. And I was just sitting there saying to myself, this is a room full of people who
don't even know what a command line is.
They're coming from closer to like a Windows administration environment where they administer their NetWare servers through Windows. The closest thing they get on the console for NetWare is maybe type a few commands and see if things are going on. And I'm like, oh, I hope he's going to, you know, hope he's going to take this onto a different track. And he did. He did. He then went over and showed how you could do basically all that stuff through the GUI interface and through the web interface tools. So two thumbs up for that guy. I managed to get my hands on the CDs for, or the ISO images for SUSE's Enterprise, Open Enterprise Server, Novell's Open Enterprise Server. I burned those to disk and started installing one on a server today. And I got interrupted way too many times when the process of doing this. There was like 10 disks it came with, but I only needed
these six.
Yeah, is that all? But that could have done an FTP.
It's like a SUSE install.
Yeah. Well, that's essentially what it is. And the thing is, the guy had all the images on a drive there, so I transferred it over to my laptop onto a USB drive. And when I got there, they were just named like ISO 1, 2, 3, whatever. And when I was putting the disks in, I got after the third disk, it asked me for the SUSE core disk, core disk number one. And I'm like, none of these were named SUSE core disk, the images. I'm like, is this part of this set? Is this a separate set? So I kept feeding it disks until it got to like the sixth disk, and then that's the one I used from that on. But I'm looking forward to getting back to work tomorrow and checking it out and see how well it integrated with the rest of eDirectory and the other servers that are in there. It's supposed to be, you know, really, really seamless. And that also prompted me, because Novell was talking about how the future of their NetWare operating system, one of the concerns is the legacy applications that runs on top of the NetWare OS not running on top of Linux. Some NLMs that businesses, particularly banks, he was an example, said being able to still run these applications without having to pay, you know, exorbitant amount of money,
X amount of dollars
for a new version that maybe won't run on Novell or had to run on Windows. And they're going to move away from the NetWare operating system, so to speak, but take that functionality of the operating system, extract the hardware layer, the actual operating components that talk with the hardware, get the core. Basically, the core of the NetWare is going to run on virtualized servers now. And instead of being, you know, NetWare all the way through, it's going to run on a lower level of just the Linux kernel and the hardware compatibility, the hardware layer. And then it's going to be a virtualized NetWare environment on top of it for those people that need to absolutely use, you know, NetWare for an NLM or an older application. But everything else is going to be straight SUSE. Two thumbs up for that. Which, and another thing that he brought up, they're really pushing some technology with Xen and virtualization, and they're doing a lot with clustering. And he talked about VMware and being able to try out SUSE using VMware Player, and they have an image out there. Now, I grabbed the KDE 3.5 image, and I pulled down VMware Player last night, and I threw it on my Arch system. And to make a long story short, it worked, okay, but I had to get through some of the hurdles with regards to Arch and installing a piece of software that wanted to go into like a Red Hat system or a SUSE system on a non-System 5 distribution. And it wasn't that hard, but one of the problems that Arch had, and Pat had commented on this too when I brought it up to him, is that the script was trying to run LSMod, and it was looking for LSMod where everybody else puts it in a user S bin, but Arch puts it in just USR bin, which was, you know, had to switch that, and then everything's running. So I actually have, from my workstation over here, my PowerBook running Ubuntu PPC, I have a VNC session over to my Arch box, which has a VMware player session running KDE on SUSE. So it's pretty interesting, pretty fun stuff. It's pretty quick too, through running through VMware Player. That's a nice little application. Two thumbs up for that. Good thing that
it's very cool. You can hack it, you know.
Yes, I haven't gotten around to doing that yet.
So you don't have to actually go out and get the full blown version of VM
right.
workstation.
That's true. You can actually you could download the trial version of VMware.
And create it.
Yeah,
images.
Create an image. Yeah. So I might try looking at other things, but I'm anxious to get into work tomorrow and pull up SUSE on the server that I installed. The server is a compact server. I believe it's a 1 or 966 megahertz
processor.
Is
it jet powered like ours?
Yeah, it is. It's the same thing. It's got a gig of RAM, and I'm wondering to see how fast SUSE is going to run on that, or whether it's going to be a little slow. Very curious. By curious, but very curious.
Dan, you're a freak, man.
So I must say, and you know what? When I was playing around with SUSE, when I was watching them use SUSE at the presentation yesterday, it got me really thinking. Distributions these days are, you know, every time I try a new distribution or go back to an old one, I'm like, wow, this is really great. This is really fun. This is exciting. But I get to that point where, you know, basically, it's the same thing I've been running. There is not much of a difference anymore between distributions. That wow and that pizzazz is
eye candy now.
Well, it's eye candy, but having gone from, like, you know, I remember first starting out, and there was a lot of things you had to configure by hand, and you know, playing around with modules and sound.
4.0 days. And
yeah, and these days, I mean, it's just like just about any distribution I pop in, everything comes up ready to go. Things look slick. I mean, you know, KDE doesn't look like garbage on most distributions. I mean, because it looks nice.
The big issue with distributions is how they come pre-configured and how is it to maintain it after you've installed it and you've been running it for a while. To me, that's what determines whether or not you keep it or not.
That's true. That's a good point. But I mean, just out of the box, a lot of them are just like
absolutely
really looking nice.
Any old distribution
really
works well.
And having run Slackware for what, 3 or 4 years, and then coming back into doing Linux installs again, and trying out different distributions, it's just amazing that
it's,
you know, it's how fast it's progressing, and how easy it actually is. I think.
Yeah, the old Red Hat 5 days, man.
Oh.
Brutal.
I started around 4, so.
I started around 5. Before that, I was running SCO Unix, but when actually SCO Unix was a good product. And Solaris, still. That was the other one I was running at work.
Solaris.
Back then, it is. The new version is pretty nice. Have you seen it lately, Link?
Yeah, it's still slow.
Yeah, compared to Linux, of course.
And now they're trying to make Solaris into Linux now.
Yeah, well, you know, that's Sun, you know. One week they love Linux, the next week they hate it.
Well, you know, right. Did you listen to Lug Radio with the interview from the guy from Sun? And they're talking, I mean, they're looking like they're pushing to make almost their entire software suite open source.
It seems there is a portion of the company there that is pushing open source. Whether or not that wins out in the end of the day remains to be
seen.
They
changed their mind once a week on it,
exactly.
Though.
And speaking of that,
fickle bunch.
Man, those Linux podcasts and the video cast. I mean, I was listening to Distro Watch today. I really like that. And then The Source?
Source is a new podcast.
Videocast,
yeah. That's pretty nice, man. Those guys are doing a good job.
Good stuff coming out, man.
Yep.
I'm really impressed.
Dan, last week we were talking about that Canadian new podcast.
Yes, and you got to get those things put up on the
show page.
You know what? The pictures of the shirts you mentioned. They're up there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We're ready to call our guest, or?
And I know, I got to.
The Source guys, I got a shout out for Aaron, who's one of the main guys, Aaron Newcomb. He had sent us an email today, and he's got us on there, and we're going to put him up on our page, too. So good stuff.
Yeah, you got to check this show out because it's very very good. Very
the
well
source. The website's called thesourceshow.org. Definitely download and check it out. Are we ready for our guest?
Yeah, I got to cut you off, Link.
But you'll be back.
Okay, do it.
Dan, you got to dial 011 before. You know that, right?
I do now.
International calling code.
Now I got to find out where I ran.
What's the matter?
I got too many things going on here.
Here we go. This is where Dan takes the server down.
Dan's staring off into space. He's starting to drool.
We got a guy at work that does the same type of thing. He's got like 20 or 30 X terms open. A terminal window is running at any one time. He's like, oh, wait, I got to find where everything is.
Oh, there it is. It's hiding behind that one.
I do the same thing when I'm coding, but I might have 20 X-term windows open, and some of them have screen sessions where there's 10 more.
Stuff running behind that, yeah.
Keep it turned that way. I'm going to cut you off, Link, too, but I can't wait till they have true transparency because it was hiding behind my, quote, transparent E-term.
Semi-transparent E-term.
Yes. Ooh. Where was I running that from? Oh, here it is. All right.
You got it?
No, I don't. I need to. So I want you to have it.
011, that number.
Yeah. I'm just pulling up IXCOM right now. Do I have to put a plus in front of it? No.
Do 011, and then that number.
Your international call.
Yeah. All of international calls from the United States, you got to dial 011.
I'll keep my finger on the volume just in case.
Let's see how this goes.
This is our first call to New Zealand via Astra, so.
Wait a minute. It didn't.
Dan's got fat fingers tonight.
No.
Ball rejected by remote.
Yeah, I wonder why it's doing that. Mm. Do I have to put a 1 in front of all that? No.
That's Skype that you got to do the plus 1.
And I don't have to do a plus in front of it.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I keep saying it's call rejected by host.
Do we have international calling on our Broadway?
Yes, it does. It does. There we go.
No. I was just calling my home phone. Oh. I'm making sure that there's actually something going out. But it keeps rejecting. It's rejecting by remote.
Huh. You could try Skype. You got Skype?
Yeah, I could try Skype.
Do you have credits?
Yeah. Tell Link. Do you want me to try with the X10 client?
Try the X10 client, man. Maybe it's IX is the problem. Why do you use IXCOM? Because you like the quality better? You think it sounds a little
better? Well, I can transfer.
Oh, I see.
So I can transfer Link to the...
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I can't transfer with the X10 unless we buy...
Is that what the deal is? They broke the functionality so that you have
something
to,
like that.
You got to pay the money to get the extra functionality.
Yeah, something like that.
Bastards.
Let me.
Gonna try the X10.
Yeah, I'm gonna try that, and I should have.
011.
All right, let me turn my volume back on.
That would help.
You got to sit there and hold the damn thing up.
This is the part of the show with. Not good, man. All
right.
No, it's part of the, it's on there. You can call out. I was, yeah.
What?
She can Skype.
Let's Skype her then. She says we could do Skype.
Are we doing Skype out or are we just going to Skype her?
Just Skype her directly, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Let me see what she says. Not a good combination.
Should I do a Skype conference? Tell Link to pop on. Oh, Matthew Bischoff is on.
No, don't get me.
Okay. Did she send us her Skype address? Hello? Alan, do some talking, man.
I really don't have much to say right now. I got my new Linux box at work.
How's it going?
So far, so good with it. On it. It's a dual AMD 64s, 8 gigs of memory. Works really nice. Now if I can get all the code switched over from the Sun versions to Linux, all the skill code that I need to do, it'll be good to go. And that's what I've done all week.
You were sick, man. You got over the HIV?
Oh, God. I was, like, dead. I slept through the show. Get out of here, dog.
That bad, huh?
It felt like somebody was, like, pushing a...
It's her name. Her Skype ID is her
pushing
her name.
Bulldozer through my face. It was that bad.
Okay. That's cool, Alan. How about that?
Link's on Skype now, too.
Yes, I saw that.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm trying to help here.
Hey, I know.
Damn you.
I know.
I'm just going to go back and be quiet now.
I hope I got that spelled right. Okay.
I hope so, too.
You're going to find out in a moment.
I'll create a conference, and we'll all join in.
All happy now.
You know, I thought, you know, I was thinking to myself, we should have tried to test call beforehand.
This is true. We are calling halfway around the world.
And I'm surprised it didn't work. I just expected it. Expected it to work. But, you know, that's my mistake.
What the heck did you just do?
Huh?
It looks like he started, but then you killed everything.
I did, because when I tried to conference her in, it just dropped her.
You got it spelled right?
That's what I'm going to double check. And once it's dropped, you know that whole audio issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the way things go.
Well, talk amongst yourselves now.
Yeah. I thought, I'm almost sure I have that in. But that's the way it goes.
Shit happens, man. And then we pick up the pieces.
There you go, Pat. Look at it right there. That's right, yes?
Yeah, spell correctly. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think she just has to approve me. So I'm pending authorization.
Okay.
Yeah, for whoever was putting in the number there in the IRC, yes, we were typing. We'll be putting that in. So
it wasn't connecting. We tried it. Maybe because I have the bare bones plan, it doesn't let us connect maybe to New Zealand. It's a possibility. Like the plan that we are under, it's not even listed if you go to the website anymore.
Yeah, I think it's only under if you bring your own stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, bring your own device.
Yeah, if you don't go under bring your own, you can't find our plan.
Every time I put her in. And I can't.
How about she calls us? What's our ID again?
Is it the Linux Link Tech Show?
Is it?
Yeah, we use Skype a lot around here, don't we?
Not lately, man. We haven't touched Skype in ages.
When that new Google service comes out.
Try that, man.
That's it.
Do you have it running?
Skype?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right there. It is right there. I'm just waiting. I can wait for her to call us.
Yeah.
No, Link called us, and now it screws everything up. Yes.
You mean it only lets one person
what
connect?
What the hell are you guys doing?
We're having a hard time getting through to her. But now I gotta shut Skype down now. Because...
Well, but you know it's working now because I called in, right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
What's our date, by the way? Just, is it the Linux Link Tech Show?
It's the Linux Link Tech Show, yeah, all one word.
Okay. Jess, if you're listening,
okay, so
call us.
Back and wait. I'm going to go back and wait then because you guys are going to initiate the three-way call, right?
We hope.
That's what I'm trying to do, but I'm not sure whether I can call her directly without her approving me first.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is a tech show.
Look at the bright side. At least Dan's not reconfiguring the server as we're talking.
Well, that's nice.
Might as well be.
Besides, he had to do that before the show started.
Ay, ay, ay.
Dude, that is spelled correctly, right?
So if you're running Slackware, you wouldn't be having so many problems, Dan. That's what it is. I just want to let you know that because you abandoned Slackware, this is what happens.
Dan has forsaken Slack.
That's it, I guess.
I haven't run Slack in a long time. That's my main desktop. It's been over.
Yeah, Pat hasn't run Slack in a long time, and look at him. That's why you should run Slackware.
I've been pretty happy with Ubuntu on my laptop, man. I can't complain about it.
Yeah, I've been using it on my desktop, too, mostly now because I'm just too damn lazy to switch stuff over back to Slack. But I run Slackware all the time on my, you know, on my laptops. I like it on my laptops because it's really, really fast, you know. Makes your laptop feel like a desktop.
I don't know, man. I think I'm more of a Debian type of person. I'm lazy. App getaway, you know?
I like doing the Slack and setting it up. And, you know, if you spend just a few, and it doesn't take long. It installs really fast. If you take that extra few minutes and set it up just the way you want, and it just runs, you know, it runs like a bullet, perfectly stable forever after that. So, plus you can, you know, you can brag that you are the Uber geek because you run Slackware.
Hey, Slackware came in second place on the Linux question survey, the voter poll.
Yeah, I read that. That really impresses me because most of the time people kind of forget about Slackware, you know. It's always that, oh, I run Red Hat, or now it's like Fedora, and what's the other one? The other Red Hat-based one?
Mandriva.
Canonix.
No. The one that Asterisk at Home runs on. CentOS.
Yes.
That's what it is. CentOS. They run those, and SUSE, and... you get the Debian guys in there. You usually don't hear much from Slackware people. I was really impressed that it made, not only did it make the list, but it was number two this time. It just proves that people are getting back to their roots and finding out what really works. I think that, I think between Slackware and Ubuntu, that pretty much compromises what Linux should be. Now I'm going to get hate mail from all the SUSE people and the and the Gentoo people.
Hey, man, you run whatever works for you, you know? If you like, if you like SUSE, stay with SUSE. You like Linspire? Go with Linspire. Whatever floats your boat, man.
You know what? You know what I normally tell people?
Fuck that.
Well, you know what I normally tell people when they ask me what distribution to run? Really? Is well, first of all, I tell them the Slackware is the best because, you know, I have to be truthful to my own self. And then after that, I tell them that they should run whatever their friend or neighbor runs that runs Linux, because that's the easiest way for somebody to get help and learn how to do things. And it really is true. You know what I mean? If you're like in an area where they have a user group or something, or you got a pile of buddies that run SUSE, that's what you should run. You should run SUSE so that you have help and you can, you know, figure out what's going on. After you run Linux for a while, you can run whatever the hell distribution floats your boat. But to start out with, you should run something that your friends run. Right?
I can't complain. Listen, man, I wouldn't care what distro was on my desktop at work, just as long as it was Linux, I'd be happy.
Yeah, Linux as opposed to running Windows or something like that, right?
Okay. I think
for some reason, it didn't like the way you spelled it the first time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that.
Because you spelled it exactly the same the second
time. Link, we're going to hang up on you, okay?
Okie dokie, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I wonder if I can do this without having to... What the heck?
And you spelled it exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's exact same spelling.
It wasn't showing up. Now it shows up. Skype sucks, man. You know, when it first came out, it was kind of cool. Now,
hey, you know, it's saving our ass now.
Yeah,
that's true.
I guess we got to upgrade our plan. Yeah.
Survey says.
The Asterix box, man, we have the bare-bone minimum phone plan. We get like an hour of call-out time. So it's been fine up till now. So I looked at the plan, and it said you can call to New Zealand. So I don't know. We tried calling, and it wasn't connecting.
Yeah, it's, you know what? It happens.
Shit happens, man.
That's the way it's supposed to go on this show. Our listeners expect nothing more.
Nothing more than the playful banter.
Than the useless banter. Ow, I'm itchy. My KDE is crashing.
KDE doesn't crash.
Ugh.
I think the last time I had any lockup issue with KDE was like Red Hat version 6 or something.
Here we go.
But will it?
That's the question.
It's going. Hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Jess?
Fine.
I am sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's Pat's fault.
It's all my fault. You see, we have an Asterix box to do the phone system here, and we have the most basic bare bones plan. And I went to the website, and it said we can call New Zealand, but when we tried to connect, it wasn't going through, so whatever. So we got Skype up and running, so we're talking to you now, and we're very happy to have you on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So I guess we could start with what's your involvement with the KDE project? I know you're the main web person for the Plasma Project website, correct?
Maybe you should start by introducing the guest.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. We got Jessica Hall from the KDE project.
I'm the webmaster for the Plasma website, but I kind of inherited that website when it was already full grown, so I haven't really done too much for it. I'm a member of the documentation team. I'm involved a little bit in marketing and promotion, and I've done a little bit of development work with Aaron, the Kicker maintainer, and the lead Copeep developer, and I kind of do a lot of little odd jobs all over the place.
Now, I've also seen your articles in Tux Magazine. You do a lot of digital photography.
Yep.
And you like Digicam, I assume, because you've written about it quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I do like Digicam, but I think I've tried pretty much every application there is to use on Linux. I'll be writing an article on F-Spot for Tux Magazine next month or the month after, I think. They're all pretty good, but Digicam's my favorite.
I like Digicam, too. It's real nice. There is one little bug, though, in Digicam. I don't know if you know which one it is.
No.
Yeah, when you want to export out to a DVD slideshow, if you want to create a slideshow and export it out to a DVD, there's a bug where it completely dies when you try to export it. It's common on all the different distros. I was reading on some of the bulletin boards, and I saw there was a bug report issue for it.
Okay, I've never tried to do that, so I've never encountered that.
Yeah, I never tried it too until Dan, you know, he emailed me saying, does this work for you? And I tried it, and it wouldn't work for me. And then I investigated a little bit, and I found it. But DigiCam is a great, great application. I love it. Especially
I think it's really good, and the developers are really great guys, too.
It's really great. The part that I like the best about it is the red-eye removal.
Yeah, it's a pretty good tool.
I mean, I used to use GIMP and apply a bunch of filters to get rid of the red-eye, but it's much easier and much quicker with DigiCam to do that.
Yeah.
Now, you do a lot of digital photography. What kind of camera do you own?
I have a really crappy Sony pocket camera. It's pretty terrible. It's a couple of years old, but I'm lucky. I have some friends that own some really nice digital SLRs that I tend to borrow a lot. So I have access to a Nikon D70 and a Canon 20D that I use a lot. And most of the pictures I've taken on Flickr are with the Canon.
I've seen some of your pictures. You take some really nice stuff.
Thanks.
Now, what do you think about F-Spot? What are your impressions of it?
I really like it. I think it's very polished, and it seems to handle dealing with raw files from digital SLRs a bit better than DigiCam does. But I haven't really had too much of a chance to look into it too deeply yet. I've pretty much just installed it and had a look and gone, yeah, I'll write an article on this, and that's about it. Yeah.
As far as DigiCam, how big of a team is developing that project?
I think there's only two or three of them, but it's been a little while since I spoke to them. I had a long talk to them when I wrote the article about it, but yeah, I'm not sure what's happening now.
So what other programs do you like using for photography?
I use the GIMP a fair bit, but sadly I can't really find a very good replacement for Photos, so I think Photoshop's probably the one I use most.
And how do you run that? Do you run that on the Windows, or you use an emulator?
I have an Emac that I use for running Photoshop, so I don't have to run Windows.
Yeah, they say that Photoshop is the number one app that most Linux people request to be ported over to natively to Linux.
Yeah, the KDE image manipulation tool, Krita, that's part of the KOffice project, is actually looking very promising, and they've had some very professional quality features added recently, but it's still not quite ready for general consumption yet.
What do you think about GIMP? Do you use that at all?
I do use it at all. I use it a fair bit. It's the thing I find with GIMP is its memory management just isn't up to scratch. Photoshop has its own internal way of paging tiles in and out of memory that's very efficient and lets me edit absolutely huge files with not too much system memory, and the performance is great. Whereas if I was to try and load in a 5,500 pixel wide image in the GIMP, it would pretty much just fall over. It's very slow and doesn't handle such big images very well. Apart from that, it's very nice for smaller things.
Now, you do mostly web development, correct?
I do a little bit of web development. I do mostly writing.
And how do you like writing? I seen your articles in Tux magazine. Tux is a great magazine. We really like what they're doing over there.
I think it's really great to give Linux more exposure to kind of beginner desktop unit users kind of thing. Yeah, I've pretty much always wanted to be a writer since I was a very small child. And it's kind of, I wouldn't know who I was if I didn't write. It's like breathing or drinking. Just kind of have to do it. I don't really think about it.
I like Tux Magazine because there's a lot. They go over a lot of applications that I normally wouldn't try out, and they approach it from a beginner standpoint. And you know, if I'm learning a new application, I'm pretty much a beginner with that application.
Mm-hmm. I think their focus on mostly how-to style articles makes them a pretty good resource for people who are just starting out.
So, do you know who Manco Poffer really is?
No, I don't, but it's not me. I have my suspicions, but I don't actually know.
Oh, she's qualifying it by saying it's not her, so now we have to be suspicious.
It's because I get a couple of emails every month saying, you can tell me, I won't tell anyone, but are you Mango? Yeah.
Do you do any desktop publishing under Linux? Have you tried any of the desktop publishing applications?
No, I do everything in Emacs, pretty much. I'm not very keen on graphical kind of desktop publishing tools or word processors.
So as far as those SLRs, I mean, they're pretty expensive cameras, but they've come down in price along with, you know, some of the just, you know, more generic cameras that are out these days. Is there any mid-range camera that you would suggest?
Not really. There are some very cheap SLRs now, and if someone wanted to get into fairly serious amateur digital photography, I'd probably recommend they get a lower-end Olympus digital SLR, because some of those have gotten really cheap now. You can get a really nice kit for about $800 New Zealand, which is, I think, about $600 US. No, $500 US. It's not very much, anyway.
See, I don't know much about SLRs. And what quality can you get out of those these days?
I actually don't know very much at all about cameras, but for me, I like them because they're the ones that have interchangeable lenses. So, unlike the fixed lens camera where you're kind of stuck with a small cheap lens that doesn't really make very good pictures, the digital SLRs, you can buy really nice lenses for them. Yeah. I pretty much just point the camera and press the button and pictures come out the other end, really.
Yeah, I pretty much do the same thing, but I don't get as good as results of some of your pictures. Now, did you learn on a standard camera, regular camera, or you've used completely digital from the beginning?
Completely digital. The first camera I bought was about 2 years ago, and it was the little point-and-shoot Sony digital camera. I still have it, actually. It's still the only camera I actually own. All the rest of them I just borrow from friends and that, yeah.
Do you use Mac at all for photography or no? You said you use Photoshop, right?
Yeah, I have an eMac, one of the white educational models, and I use that for running Photoshop. I'm not really much of an operating systems Nazi. I have Mac and Linux, and I use Kdy and other desktops, and yeah, kind of a bit of everything. I just prefer not to touch Windows if I can help it.
So how long have you been working with the Kdy project, but how long have you been involved?
I've had a CVS account for about a year and a half now, I think. So it's probably getting pretty close to 2 years. I don't know. About a year and a half.
Have you gotten together with some of the KDE people in person? Have you gone to the conferences?
No, I haven't made it to a conference yet. I'm definitely going this year. I've met one KDE developer in person who came to New Zealand for a holiday, but I'm still looking forward to meeting Aaron and Zach and all those guys at the next conference.
Now, you said you're in New Zealand. Wasn't there the Australia Linux conference? It was held in New Zealand?
It was, and I couldn't make it there. I was really annoyed. I was supposed to go and present some development talks with Aaron that was kind of on again and off again, and we didn't know if he could make it. And then at the last second, he could make it, and I'd already assumed he couldn't and made other plans. It was really disappointing.
That's kind of odd that they would have the Australian conference in New Zealand.
It is a bit odd. I'm not sure why they did that.
Change things up, I guess.
No, I guess Australians have a little kind of think of New Zealand as a bit of an annex to Australia sometimes.
Now, you're Australian, right, by birth?
Yep.
How do you like New Zealand?
I love it. I think it's absolutely great. It has a much better political climate, and Kiwi accents are really adorable, and it's just gorgeous.
It's a beautiful country. I mean, we've, you know, most of our exposure to New Zealand's been through movies and TV shows and a Lord of the Rings. And it looks like an absolutely beautiful country.
Do you live near the Hobbits?
I don't think you'd believe me if I told you.
The Shire.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I was looking through. I'm looking on your website, right? Look at through some of your pictures and stuff like that. And your pictures are absolutely beautiful. The ones that you've been taking, I'm totally impressed with.
Thanks.
Jess, some of the people in the IRC want to know what distribution you're running on your desktop.
I use Slackware Linux on my desktop, and I have...
Yeah! I love this girl!
And I found that power management on Slackware wasn't quite so good for laptops. I struggled with it for a really long time, and I've just finally switched to Ubuntu on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I find the power management is a bit better. So it's driving me a lot crazy, actually, because it's not Slackware. But I am probably going to end up being able to be friends with it.
it's not terrible coming from a Slackware perspective. It's just different.
Very different, yes.
Now, are you used to compiling a lot of your software?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And once you go to like Ubuntu or a package more a distribution that uses package management more, it takes a little getting used to.
It does. I'm having to train myself to search for packages in apt instead of just automatically going and trying to grab the sources and compiling things. I'm still compiling my own KDE. That's something that I just refuse to use packages for.
What do you do? Just pull it off of CVS?
Yep. Yeah, grab the latest 3.5.
Make sure you have the most current stuff.
And I've got what will become KDE 4, but that's not really all that usable at the moment.
That's what everybody wants to know about KDE 4.
Yeah.
And anytime there's like a posting on the internet, people just clamor with comments. Oh, this is real. No, this is a fake. This is a mock-up, blah, blah, blah.
So yeah, what kind of really cool things can we expect to see from KDE from your perspective?
From my perspective, really, really great user documentation and really great developer documentation. But probably that's not really all that interesting to you guys. What I'm going to be really keen on seeing is scrapping so much of Kicker and K-Desktop, and Aaron is just about rewriting it to work much better together, and it's going to be a much more seamless desktop experience, and it's going to be a lot more stable, and we're going to get rid of a lot of bugs that have been hanging around in Bugzilla for a really long time. And it's moving to Qt 4 is allowing us to throw away so much old stuff we had to hold on to for reasons of binary compatibility. So this new major version is going to let us do revolutionary things we've wanted to do for years but haven't been able to.
Yeah, Link was just saying that last week he's excited about the version 4 of the Arts subsystem there.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for the Arts D to come out. Boy, oh boy.
If it makes you feel better, Arts has already been removed from KDE 4. That was one of the first things that happened, actually. Arts was completely removed.
It's always been a real nuisance, the Arts server. It doesn't play nicely with other applications that are not KDE-based.
No, it doesn't, and it's sad, because it's actually immensely powerful. It's very complicated, but it's immensely powerful, and it's a really great real-time mixer. But because it's so complicated, people run into an awful lot of trouble with it. I have spent an awful lot of time writing documentation on how to get around Arts being annoying. So, but the new framework, I believe, is going to be really abstracting out the multimedia stuff so that you can use a variety of different backends with it, which hopefully will please more people.
So did you guys, is there like a new mixer type client, audio client to go with KDE, or... You know what I mean? Is there like an Arch replacement that we're all going to hate? That's what I guess I'm getting to.
Yeah. No. There's going to be... The sound framework hasn't really had too much development yet, so we're not really entirely sure what shape it's going to take. But it's going to allow you to use a variety of backends. So if you like your GStreamer or whatever, you're going to be able to use that with KDE, and it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Properly. It's going to be integrated to work from the beginning.
So what you're telling me is, like, after KDE 4 comes out, I'm going to be able to pull up an MP3 file or an OGG in XMMS, and it's going to work and not bleep at me and tell me I'm retarded and the sound is already being used somewhere else, right?
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Okay, because we've gone through, up through all the KDEs up to this point, and I'm starting to get really pissed off because every time another one comes out, Arch bleeps at me. That's why I use XFCE.
Yeah.
The one program...
I actually compile my KDE without Arts. There's a configure flag. You can pass it without Arts.
The one program that always screws everything up for me in any way has always been Audacity. Audacity does not play nice with anything.
No, it doesn't. It wants to completely 100% grab your sound card and nothing else is going to touch it.
Well, what the hell? If you're recording and mixing... How are you going to do that? Use a sound card at the same time?
Right.
Yeah. It's not just Linux, though. Alan had an issue with Audacity running on his Mac.
Alan was running on a Mac.
Sorry.
He's a Macophile.
No, it just happened to work that night, and that was what I wanted to use.
What it did was it changed.
Yeah, it changed my sound card to 8-bit instead of 16.
Yeah,
which is why you guys that 2 weeks ago were hearing all that noise. But the weird thing was I couldn't hear it on my end, so that's why I kept going, no, it's not me.
But is there a better application than Audacity?
Resound?
I mean, there's Resound, but, I mean, does that work really? I've used Resound in the past, and I've had it crash on me more frequently than
Yeah, it crashes
Audacity.
More.
Well, you guys know there's going to be a better application, right?
Yeah. When he gets done writing it, the multi-track one?
Yeah.
Cubase?
Cubase.
Not Cubase.
What's KDE offering?
Joe Kosher, right? Is that what they're calling it now? J-O-K-O. I'm going to put the link up in... I'm going to put the link up in the IRC chat. Anyway, what we're talking about, for those of you who don't have the Clowfish right now, is Jono from Lug Radio and some of his buddies are writing a new music client tracker that is called Jokosher, Jokosher, I guess. And it looks really, really promising. I'm hoping it gets done really fast, and then they can release it as an integral part of... of KDE4, right?
I don't think that'll happen.
My humor is just like getting wasted tonight, isn't it?
It's probably going to be on the GStreamer framework.
Yeah, it's GStreamer based on its GTK, I think.
Oh, never mind. You guys just don't.
So, Jess,
you're not keeping up with me here.
What's KDE have on the dock for some good audio editing?
I have absolutely no idea. I don't even have the sound card configured on my KDE box.
Blasphemy.
I'm not very keen on my computer beeping at me when it wants my attention. I just go and disable the sound card.
How about that? Wow.
So how are you talking to us now? Are you talking to us via your Macintosh or what? No lying.
I'm using a Macintosh, yes. I'm using an iPhone to run Skype on.
Okay.
That's okay.
See, now the other three guys, they didn't catch on to that whole thing where you disabled your sound card in Linux. I caught on to that.
I was paying attention. Is Plasma going to have true transparency?
Yes.
Awesome.
KDE already does if you're using the composite extension. And KDE 3.4 or 3.5? One of those two versions, anyway. You can already use true transparency, but unless you have a very good NVIDIA card with the binary drivers, it's unusably slow.
Yes, I've heard of that.
I have had it working, and it's not too bad, but there are a few issues. Like the little message bubbles that Copete pops up, clicking on one of those when you have transparency enabled will cause X to crash and drop you back at the command prompt, which is a bit of a bugger.
That's a little problem.
It's just a little problem, yeah.
It's not a problem, it's a feature.
It's a feature.
Right. It's to avoid memory.
Yeah, you don't need that X distracting you from doing work anyway. What else?
Wow, you should be a Windows programmer.
X too. So, yeah, it's got a little way to go, but by Plasma, it should be pretty much perfect, they say.
So even though you're using an iBook, do you prefer Aqua or KDE?
KDE. I have the iBook on the desk next to me, but I have my KDE laptop on my lap. So, it's closer.
Now, have you been using Fink or Darwin ports or any of that other stuff?
No.
X under OS X?
I have used X under OS X so that I can X forward an Emacs session from my Linux box to my Emacs to write some code in, because all the editors on the Mac were driving me nutty. But I haven't used Fink or Darwin ports, no.
I was going to say, you can get Emacs on OS X.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was doing. There was something wrong with the key mappings, that I was hitting a key mapping that should have done something, and it just went completely different. I got really angry with it and just didn't want to touch it again. Yeah.
You're just not into the Apple way now.
Not really, no. The only reason I even have one is for Photoshop, really. It's the lesser of two evils, to use the Mac for that instead of Windows.
I can see that. I can understand that. Did you ever try running the Photoshop under Crossover Office?
I certainly have. I just finished writing an article for that for Linux Journal, actually, a review on Crossover Office.
Oh, well.
It works pretty well.
What month is that coming out?
I don't know, April or May.
Looks like I better renew my subscription.
Yeah, I was using it on my 700 megahertz laptop, Photoshop 7, and it was running reasonably well, but I didn't try doing anything very complicated. I just resized a couple of photographs and, you know, touched up a few images. I don't know how it would have gone doing anything really performance intensive.
Now, you do a lot with photography. What about graphic design? Do you do a lot with that?
No, not really. I did a little bit once, but I wasn't really terribly good at it.
Have you tried out, like, Inkscape or Scribus?
No, I haven't.
Fun applications. Now, do you do video editing?
No.
Not at all?
Not on Linux, that's for sure.
It's actually gotten a lot better. We know Dan Dennedy, who's the Kino guy, and that project has really come along the last couple of years.
Sorry, I keep getting distracted by the IRC channel.
Isn't it?
Do you think they'll ever port Photoshop over to Linux native?
I hope so, but honestly, I really don't see it happening.
What's the attitude towards Linux over in New Zealand? I mean, it sounds like, you know, we hear a lot of stuff coming out of Australia. Seems to be a lot of support. I mean, what's the attitude in New Zealand?
I don't really know. A lot of people know what Linux is, which is not something I found a few years ago. There are a lot of places here who are using some pretty big installations of KDE, like the computer science department of one of the big universities here has a couple of hundred FreeBSD and KDE machines, and I know of a few places that use Linux on the desktop, so it's definitely gaining some more acceptance here than it used to. But, yeah, I'm not really sure if it's all that well-known yet.
So it's not like the average Joe on the street is starting to pick up on this Linux thing?
I don't think, no, not yet, not really.
How's it compare with the scene in Australia?
I don't really know that either.
No problem.
Hey, you're being honest.
I guess if you don't know, that it probably isn't, you know, much different than it is around here. I mean, you've probably got pockets of people who really, you know, get into it, and then you have, you know, everybody else.
And most of my friends are part of one of those pockets that's really into it, so it's hard for me to judge what the average person thinks of Linux.
I know you said there's not a lot of, like, average Joes that use it around there, but do you have, like, large user groups of people? Linux user groups or BSD user groups up there?
Yep, there's a pretty big Linux users group here. I used to attend it a fair bit, but I haven't found time to lately.
It sounds like our log. These guys never show up.
What do you think
They're
is
so
more
bad.
Prevalent? Yeah, right. Never show up. What is more prevalent out there? Is it the BSDs or is it Linux?
Linux.
You know, we have a fourth
guy
here named Alan.
Those long, awkward pauses.
Yeah. No, I was actually looking at
something. Everybody's reading the IRC channel, right?
It's very distracting.
I should shut it off.
Yeah. Close it down. Kill the server.
That's it.
Bump everybody off.
Everybody would be real happy about that.
Yeah, right? You don't want to kill the server because that kills the ice cast as well.
That could be a problem, then.
At any rate, you know, this is a good time to mention it. You know, for those of you who consistently complain that we have those long pauses where nobody is saying anything during the show, that's what we're doing. We're reading the IRC chat, and we do make the chat log available for you guys to catch up on. You can download that and check it out later. You know, and if you are a real Linux user, you would just be listening to the show live and be on IRC with us. So,
and Skype has a real brutal delay. It's a few seconds.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's mostly the Skype delay because I'm not really hearing all that much in the way of long, awkward pauses. I think I'm lagging a bit.
Yeah, you know, you're halfway around the world.
Exactly.
Opposite ends. It's what, 2 o'clock? Over 3 o'clock now,
3 o'clock
right?
In the afternoon?
Almost 4 o'clock.
Almost four. Is the weather nice there this time of year?
It is, actually. It's great. I'm looking out the window. It's sunny and pretty still day and nice and warm. I think a lot of my friends are across the road at Botanical Gardens at the moment, kind of wishing I was there.
I wish I was near Botanical Gardens. I got a graveyard up the street. It's not really the same thing.
Well, if you've seen one daisy, you've seen them all, huh?
So you're a big Emacs user, I take it, judging from. And a big KDE user and Slackware.
Yep.
What do you think of, I guess you're, you know, you don't care, Slackware pulling GNOME out of the main distribution.
One less CD for me to download when I update it, you know.
There you go. But then you got the opposite. You got Ubuntu, which is like in your face GNOME off the default
install. Yeah, it is.
It's actually a lot more tolerable once you get rid of the default brown colors.
Yeah, that's the first thing I did was make GNOME blue instead of brown.
Yep.
But as a developer, I compile my own KDE anyway, so I could have installed Kubuntu, but then I wouldn't have used that KDE install, and since I write some articles on GNOME applications for Tux and Linux Journal, I figured it was better to have GNOME on there.
Now, with regards to writing for Linux Journal and Tux, did you start writing for Linux Journal, and then, you know, since they started doing Tux, you know, it was just a nice little match there, or was it the other way around? You started at Tux and...
I actually started with Tux, and at that time, after a few months, the then editor of Tux magazine was moved on to become the editor of Linux Journal. And I just continued pitching articles to him and getting article assignments. And then the new Tux editor came along, and yeah. So that's how I ended up writing for both. The old editor kind of took me along when he went to Linux Journal.
So prior to Tux and Linux Journal, did you write articles for other magazines or any online publications?
Not for a while. A couple of years ago, I wrote articles for a few Australian gaming magazines, but... my background is mostly in some really dry technical writing and developer documentation, really.
Hey, we need a lot of developer documentation. Actually, we need a lot of user documentation, too. So then, for writing for the gaming magazines, were you writing from a technical aspect of that, or was it kind of more a reviewing of games that are coming out?
Hardware reviews.
So then is your background, did you go to school for some kind of computer-related or electrical engineering? And
Nope,
none of that at all?
I studied law.
You studied law?
Yep.
And now you're writing...
I decided it really wasn't my thing.
Wow.
At least you made the right choice.
How long did it take you to figure that one out? Like, I don't like
one
this
semester?
Law stuff.
2.5 years into a degree, unfortunately. But at least I figured it out.
So then, did you just stop, or are you still going to school, or are you finishing up with any kind of degree?
No, I just quit then and went off to do something else, and I'm thinking of going back to university probably next year to study math and computer science, but I was going to do it this year, but kind of missed enrolling in some classes, so I guess that's going to be next year now.
That's great. Hey, you know what? You already got your foot in the door writing those articles. Hey, you're already in KDE. You're at the top of the world.
Well, not quite.
So, KDE 4 is just around the corner on the horizon. And in the past year and a half, we have seen a lot of major distributions. SUSE is one of them. You know, Ubuntu comes along. And it seems to be a huge push for, in favor of the GNOME desktop. Particularly in a business environment, but there's still that undercurrent of primarily, it seems, desktop consumer users are really saying KDE's, you know, the top's number one, always rated number one. Do you think KDE 4 is really going to push KDE out in the forefront? And, you know, is this going to knock everybody's socks off? Is this what Linux has been waiting for?
I think so, and it's actually pretty exciting to be part of it, because the people who are developing KDE and GNOME in particular are making really big strides to bringing Linux as being ready to the desktop user, and it's really exciting to be a part of that. And I think one of the big things we'll be focusing on KDE 4 is better marketing and promotion, because we've always had really great technologies and we've always had really great features. In fact, I find it funny when I'm reading about the new upcoming version of GNOME, what features it's going to have, and KDE developers are sitting there reading this going, well, hang on, we had that 3 years ago. Just no one really knew about it. So we're kind of needing to learn to promote ourselves a lot better, which is something the GNOME project has traditionally been a lot better at than we have. So hopefully it'll be a real coming together of both, you know, new technologies, great new features, really leveraging all the new Xorg stuff that's happening at the moment, but also promoting and marketing better what we already actually are doing right that people just don't really seem to be hearing about. And I think
so all that being said,
really,
then,
that puts it on the corporate desktop.
Mm-hmm. All that being said, then do you believe that, that this 2006 is going to be like the year of the Linux desktop kind of thing? Is this where the caterpillar finally turns into a butterfly and we can get going along?
Oh, completely. When I look at really user-friendly desktop-centric distros like Ubuntu, I get really excited because it is so close. It's almost there. I can just about hand this to my mother and you know, she'd have no problems using it kind of thing. So I don't think it will take too much more.
What's your mom using right now? Is she Apple?
Windows at the moment.
Ah.
I have an old laptop for her that I'm going to send her with, probably Kubuntu on it, but I'm a bad daughter.
Right.
I haven't gotten around to doing it yet.
Hey, whatever you can do, huh? Now, do you have to do tech support for your family then? I'd say your friends, but your friends all sound like they're technically savvy.
I do some tech support for my friends, but then they do some for me. We complement each other very well. I have a 13-year-old brother who, my mum says, is turning into a computer geek just like me. And he's the one that deals with all of that. So, good on him.
Now, is he running Linux?
No, he's running Windows. But he knows what Linux is, and he's very interested in KDE. And I was quite horrified to discover he'd found my blog on Google. so I now have to be a bit more careful about what I say, since I know that my mum's going to be reading it now that Samuel found it. Yeah.
At least it's not on MySpace.com.
Oh, jeez.
True. So they're not, you know, they haven't really used Linux, but they're still living in Perth, which is on the other side of Australia. It's about as far away as you can get from me without being in a third country entirely, and it would just be far too difficult for me to support them over that distance, and I don't think Linux is quite ready for my mother yet.
But when KDE 4 comes out, that's it.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I will deliver it to her proudly, and I'm sure she'll love it.
Excellent. Ask you just a few quick questions about Australia.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch documentaries about Australia and a lot of things, there seems to be a whole lot of really deadly animals over there, like squid that could kill you, or octopus that could kill you just by touching you. And
not in downtown Sydney, though.
No, but I mean, it seems like it could be a really beautiful but brutal place.
I think most of those documentaries are focusing on the area where I grew up too, the Northern Territory, which is kind of, the most brutal part in that regards. But one thing I love about New Zealand is New Zealand doesn't have any of those. I think the most deadly thing they have is a bird.
Xena.
Yeah, Xena.
Xena.
Lucy Wallace.
A deadly bird.
Well, it's not really all that
now
deadly.
They have those deadly KDE developers over there.
The bird would try and eat their luggage. But apart from that, it's very friendly here. There's no crocodiles, there's no poisonous spiders, there's no snakes. It's good. I like it.
So now, does all your family now live in New Zealand, or is your family still back in Australia and you just live in New Zealand?
All of my family is still back in Australia, and I'm the only one that lives in New Zealand.
Aha.
Awesome.
I kind of came over here on a whim a couple of years ago and decided to stay because it was really nice. And New Zealand and Australia have a very friendly agreement as far as immigration is concerned, because I'm an Australian citizen. I pretty much can just stay as long as I want. I don't need a visa, which is cool.
We got to get over that part of the world at some point. I'd really like to go see both countries in the future.
I think you'd really enjoy it. It's absolutely beautiful over here. I wouldn't live anywhere else.
So then, if you're in New Zealand, can you go over to Australia the same way without having to have a visa?
Yep.
Wow. You know, you can't. Can you do that if you're Canadian, United States? Just go live in.
I don't know. They all used to be part of the Dominion.
Can't do that if you're Mexican.
No.
Wow. That's nice. That is nice.
You can go hang out in Canada. You just don't want to go someplace where they, like, you don't want to go to the French border in Canada because they call you dirty names and stuff when they figure out that you're American. But
well, it seems that in foreign countries that if you're an American, the locals think that, you know, you're part of the government administration and like, they get on your ass about it. But life goes on.
It is true.
But life goes
on.
It is true. Well, Jess, I want to thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time out. And, you know, I apologize again for the problems that we had in the beginning, but we worked it out. I'm glad we got to talk to you.
Oh, that's all right. Thanks for having me on here. It's always great to have an opportunity to talk about KDE and where it's going.
Oh, well, we look forward to reading articles in the future.
Yeah, and don't be a stranger either. You know, we'd love to have you on the show again, talk about KDE and what kind of things you have going on, maybe some new things, and you know, and perhaps a review of the things that you're working on now when they're out and working. You know.
Mhm. Yeah, that'd be good.
Excellent. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much. You go enjoy the botanical garden.
I'm going to. Alrighty.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Thank you very much.
And that was Jess Hall.
Link.
Yes.
Go back on the X10.
Okay.
La 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 la. I got a question.
Now you have to find out where the X10 was or the.
Hold on. Wait. Shh.
Quiet. He's hunting rabbits.
No, he's checking something out. He's wondering. He's wondering if.
What in the hell are you talking
about? Where are they?
Audacity's still recording.
What'd you do? Hit the wrong button and close the wrong thing?
No. Thing went power down.
Oh.
And I plugged it back in and brought it back up. Which I was surprised it came back. Came back perfectly. But Audacity's still going. It looks like it's still recording. It's counting down, but I don't see it. Like, I'm confused.
Well, worst case, I've got the stream recording over here.
I got a recording there, too. Okay. And I don't know if I want to stop it and then start it again. I don't know. But it looks like it's recording. I guess I better go bring Link back up. I don't know. We'll find out. Blah, 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 blah. This day couldn't get any worse.
Oh, stop you crying.
What?
Hello.
Stop you crying.
Yeah, well.
Hello.
Hello.
What can I say?
Hello.
Hi.
It's been a rather slow night for us here.
Oh. And here, too.
Who is beeping around
Houston
here?
Branch of the Linux Link Tech Show. It has also been a slow evening.
Or am I the only one that hears that?
What are you talking about?
About every 10 minutes I hear this like, doo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo.
I'm not hearing that, man.
It's like something on Dan's desk is beeping over here.
Could be me. Could be just the way of the world. Know
well,
what
just
I mean?
So you know, your desk is going to blow up soon.
Yeah, well.
I found out what was beeping over here, too. It was my new cordless mouse. Like when I first bought it, it's rechargeable, right? It has a. So I put the rechargeable batteries in to like check it out and play with it. And in the manual, it says charge it for like 2 hours or something first, but I never charged it, so the batteries ran out.
It keeps dying on you.
Shit. So this is right before the show, right? So I had to take them out real quick and hunt through my drawer and find two regular AAA batteries to put in the damn thing so I could use my mouse while I was talking.
I was just going to say, you know they will die when you need them the most.
Well, see, the good part is like at least it's a rechargeable mouse, right? So
yeah,
I can just stick it in the cradle. The other cool part is, like I said, I just plugged it in. I just plugged this thing in the USB port, and it started working. I never unplugged my other keyboard and mouse. So they still work, too, at the same time.
Oh, that's good.
So, like, potentially I could pick my, you know, wireless mouse up, chuck it across the room, and just grab my other corded mouse, which is sitting right next to it, and start using that. And
be good to go, yeah.
Not miss a beat kind of thing.
Just don't stick it in your rectum.
I guess that's kind of cool.
It's not what it's made for.
It's a little big for that, you know?
You'd fit it in there.
Dan, you're scaring me, man.
I don't think so.
You're always posting bizarre pictures with objects that don't belong in places where they shouldn't go.
He's got this fascination with his rectum. I'm not sure.
And yours, too.
I think Dan should have been a proctologist, man. You have to work with assholes all day.
Hell, he can come work for me if he wants to work with assholes all day.
So I was talking with a person I work with today, and She was
no way
looking at KVMs, and she got a KVM, a four-port switch. I forget what it was. And I said, she asked me if I used a KVM, and I said, yeah, I do. I have a Zonet, which I think you have, right, Link? You have a Zonet?
A what, huh?
A Zone KVM, a Zonet KVM.
I have one, too.
No, I have a Belkin.
Oh, okay. And I was commenting, how I have mine, and she said that she has one that has four ports, and it came with two cables. And I said, how much was it? And she's like, 200 and some bucks she paid for it. And it knocked me on the floor because I bought this thing like 3 years ago for like 40, 45 bucks. Came with four cables. It sounds like it does the same things her does.
Yeah, I have a two-port one. I paid like
that's a lot of money, yeah.
$60 for, I think.
I mean, for 200
I
bucks, that thing
that
better
I got
do
right
more
before
than switch.
You got yours, it cost me like 23 bucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I don't know. You know what? We have it. We keep mentioning and keep talking about bringing up on the show proper is the whole music streaming servers. I mean, we talked about it post-show about 2 weeks ago. The GNU MP3 and the MP3 Act. I mean, we haven't really brought these up on the regular show. And that's something I think about we can talk about. Now, Link, you use the GNU MP3, right?
Yeah, GNU MP3D,
yep. Yeah,
I've used Alan, too.
I've used that, too. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I'm not using it right now, but I had used that one.
What are you using right now?
The new one Link's using.
Wait a minute, you just said you're not using that right now.
No, because I'm not streaming anything right now.
Not like right now,
Not right now, when I'm even at home.
Do you have a server at home with it running?
I had one, but it's not running right now, no.
And I saw Link had it up. Last time he was right. I've been
my e-machine finally.
Yeah, it gave out.
Well, it's still going, but it's just going slower and slower and slower.
Now, the one that I tried out and started using, because I couldn't remember what you guys were using before, was MP3 Act. And to me, I mean, it was a snap to set up, but it's a little beefier with requirements than the GNU MP3D, whereas it requires an amp setup. Mostly running on Linux. And unfortunately, MP3 Act doesn't do AUG, which GNU and MP3D does. What?
That's odd that it doesn't do AUGs.
Yeah, I know. It is. It's It just streams.
Doesn't do AUG, and it uses... it's a little bit slower, too, I thought.
I didn't notice any slowness.
Especially, like, the whole importing your songs and crap like that, that's, like, horribly slow.
Mine runs pretty fast.
That was my impression, anyway.
I mean, I don't know. You don't have to import songs on yours, do you? Or you do it. It goes into a flat file, right?
No, does it automatically by itself.
It does it automatically. On MP3.
Yeah.
Now, does it allow you to download the songs from that GNU MP3D?
Yeah, you can set it to download the songs.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, functionality, I think they pretty much, operate in the same way. Both are... access through a web browser,
mm-hmm.
and both of them work outside a network. So I have mine. I have a port forwarded through my NAT that I connect to on it from work, and I can stream my and it runs really really well. I was impressed. So either one of those I think are pretty decent. But I mean, there's a little more functionality with GNU MP3D and versatility. I would say.
Yeah. A little more functionality. It sets up way faster, and you don't have to have a LAMP server running to use it. But you know what? I was crabbing about the fact that I wanted to have a on my blog. I was crabbing about the fact that I wanted to have a streaming server for all kinds of media files, like video files in particular. I want to do the like a localized IPTV thing. Download the video blogs and IPTV shows that I like to watch on my server every night, via like Bashpot or something like that. And then if I go to work or something and I want to watch one of them, I should be able to stream it there and watch it. The problem is that there are certain formats of files that GNU MP3D just does not want to seem to stream. One of those are the M4V files. I don't know why I can't get it to stream. It doesn't even display.
Is that MPEG-4 video?
There. Right. It won't even display that it's there in the list, like pick from. And it really pisses me off. So I've been looking around for something different or a way to fix that. I haven't found really anything either way. But Adam York, a listener of the show, whose wife we had on playing music by the way, a while back, sent me an email saying that he uses a he uses one called MHive. You guys heard that before?
No.
Heard of that? Media Hive, it's called. I'm going to put the link in the IRC. And it looks really cool. I haven't had a chance to actually use it yet. It runs on Java. Haven't had a chance to use it yet and play with it. Looks damn good, though. And in like the screenshots and things like that, it does all kinds of nifty stuff. But yeah, I was just wondering if anybody used that and what their impressions were of that, or if somebody decides that they want to try it out, let me know.
Java applications have gotten a lot more usable the last couple of years. Like Azurius, I use for BitTorrent. That's a pretty good application. That's Java-based.
Uh-huh.
But you only download the legal BitTorrent stuff.
Yeah, right. Just,
this thing looks really like Ajax-y kind of thing, so I'm wondering if it's how snappy it actually is. No, Adam says it works really good, but like I said, I haven't had a chance to try it yet. I probably will at some point in time.
Tank?
And we also have somebody talking about Jinzora.
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 Did he Jinzora. Fight Godzilla in the last movie?
Yeah. What was the name again? Is it M-Vine? M-V-I-N-E?
Media Hive. M-Hive. M-H-I-V-E dot org.
Let's take a look at that.
Well, it looks really neat, you know, but I just haven't had a chance to try it out yet, so. Jinzora.
Jinzora.
www.jinzora.com.
Gojira.
Your digital media, anytime, anywhere, it says. Okay, it's another one I'm going to have to check out.
Hey, should we mention where we're staying up in Linux World Expo? People want to go up there. And
yeah.
If you guys need a cheap hotel, you can do what we're doing. We're not actually staying in Boston proper. All the official hotels that are part of the Linux World Expo, they're pretty expensive. They're like $200 a night. We sure as hell don't.
They're really expensive.
Yeah, we don't want to spend $200 a night and have to pay for parking as well. So what we're doing is we're staying a little outside of Boston. We're staying in Braintree, Massachusetts at the Holiday Inn, and it's $96 a night. That includes free breakfast and free broadband wireless in your room. So if you guys want to...
And you know what, folks? We're going to test that out. That
oh, yeah, we're going to push it, man.
It's going to be no broadband for everybody else in the motel and free broadband for the two rooms that we're occupying, probably.
So if you guys want to, you know, stay somewhere where it's a little cheaper, by all means, book in the same hotel, and we can hang out outside of the show. And we can get
free
pissed.
Food.
And we can get pissed together.
Free booze.
I got to track down that wireless hub I have.
The one you won last year?
Yeah. I don't know what happened to that. The last I saw, I gave it to my wife to use and disappeared.
That worked out pretty well last time where you just hooked it up and...
Bring booze and cigars.
Booze, cigars, and computers.
Yeah, I miss... I got to find that.
Yes, you got to dig that out, man. We're going to need that.
It is. It's really good. Really good stuff.
Because we're gonna suck down that broadband as much as possible.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. We only got another 2-3 weeks. 3 weeks.
A month, yeah.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Yep.
Now we're going down Monday, right?
Yeah, we're gonna go up Monday. You know, we gotta go in, check out the cubicle, and I guess set up Monday, and then Tuesday morning is the show. So have you guys looked at?
Yes. So meet us there at our booth, man, and stop by and hang out with us.
Are we going to mention some of the stuff we're giving away or no?
It'd be a surprise.
No, come by and see for your damn self. That's
yeah, we're going to be giving away some cool stuff.
You want some Texo stuff? Come and get it.
Shall I do some Frapper shoutouts?
Yeah, go ahead. We have any new people in Frapper?
Yeah, we got some new people. We got Alan Webb from Warrington, England. We got Anders from Viborg, Denmark. Anders Storvin from Trondheim, Norway. We got Albert Meher from Beverwijk, Holland, Jim Eden from Merrimack, New Hampshire, This is elite speak. I don't know that spelling. From Reynoldsville, Ohio. I'm sorry. John Martin from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Pierre from Seattle, Washington. And Mark Peterson from Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Good stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce some of these elite speak spellings with numbers and letters and shit. I have no patience to freaking figure that stuff out. You know, prawn is about the extent of my geek speak.
We'll have to have a elite speak primer.
Yes. Maybe we could do a twatcast about it.
Yeah, there you go. Yours is you know when yours is coming up, right? At the end of the month.
Yes. Thank you for emailing me the calendar. I think he didn't have my right email address for whatever reason.
And are you on the mailing list now?
I haven't seen it. I guess I should sign up. That's probably why I haven't seen anything. explains that.
You know? I wonder what happened to why don't they have your mailing list? Your email address. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Life goes on. Alan, you got anything to add?
No, I'm good for the night.
Dan?
I was on the Infonomicon last night helping Potrillo, or whatever his name is, with...
Potrillo.
With M-Player on Slackware. And it was interesting because he had downloaded the M-Player and compiled it himself and installed it, but he didn't put the codecs in the right place before he compiled, so it didn't pick up all the codecs. So
you got to recompile at that point.
Well, yeah. But then what had happened was he had gotten M-Player plugin because what he didn't like was when he go out to a site and it would have a video, it would bring up the G-Zine.
Yeah, that's a pain. I accidentally clicked on G-Zine and it changed all my settings. That was a pain in the ass.
Right.
You basically, there's like only two files you have to like get rid of, but... Right, finding the damn thing.
That was the problem. So he got the M-Player plugin, compiled it, and installed it. But then it kept bringing up G-Zine. And you had to go through not only his home directory, .mozilla.plugins, but you had to, on the Slackware side, he had to go into userlib-mozilla plugins, userlib-mozilla, the version plugins, userlib-firefox plugins, and get rid of all the instances or wherever it was. Yeah. It was a nuisance. But finally, but then he went and the
pain about that was it always came up as a default of half the size anyways. No matter what, I was like, well, okay, I'll use that for a little bit. It would open up the plugin and then open up a separate application as well. I was like, this is a pain in the butt.
Yeah, and I for a while in Arch, it was doing that with, it was using G-Zine as opposed to M-Player plugin, which I usually have set. And I just tried it out, too, and I noticed it doesn't integrate as well.
No.
Like, it won't, like, M-Player plugin embeds it right into the browser. It with the G-Zine, it doesn't always do that, and sometimes, like, floating off to the side. And
mine never did it. It always opened up, it always opened up G-Zine, no matter what. And it always opened it up at 50% size.
Yeah.
Even though I kept going in and telling it, always open up 100.
And there's no controls for it, either.
Yeah.
And that's crappy. That's what I don't get either. If I run G-Zine and I want to play a DVD, it doesn't have the same controls that just the Zine UI has, a regular Zine UI.
Yeah, I'd rather just play through that.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. But
and I got to put the popping filter back on this.
Yeah, it's just wow. It's such annoying. It was so annoying. I don't know. I like M-Player, but I like Zine
for DVD playback. I like that.
What?
For DVD playback, I like Zine.
Yeah, I do too. And VLC is not too bad. I'll use VLC on the OS X before I'll use QuickTime.
Yeah, it works real nice over there.
I'm not a big fan of... I don't like Apple's QuickTime player. That's worse than RealPlayer. Every time you bring it up, it's got ads in it already. They're always trying to sell you shit.
Yeah.
Serious?
Yeah, Apple's QuickTime.
Bastards.
I don't know, man. That $99 iPod sleeve still has me.
You mean you haven't went out and bought one yet?
I bought two.
I'm going to give them away as gifts.
Man. And you know what? It costs more to buy that than it does to stay in a hotel for overnight.
You're right.
Holy crap.
I'm checking out the latest floor plan to see who they got listed around us. It's actually more populated now. Let's see if I can...
Who's around us? Nobody. We're by the bathrooms and the garbage can.
They got right across from the Slashdot Lounge, whatever that is.
Uh-oh.
We've got...
I'm in trouble now.
We've got PostSeg SQL. Looks like we got the Xorg Foundation, Free Software Foundation, the Free Standards Group. We got Joomla next to us. We got FreeBSD across the way. Ubuntu's across the way. Linux Terminal Server Project's on the other side. Fedora's on the other side. That's it. Who they got listed. And SourceForge, it looks like.
Oh, you know what? Here's a question for our listeners out there. Are we still? What time is it?
It's 10:28.
Yeah, we said
10:29.
The media specialist said to me today, he's like, man, there's got to be a way that we could put out a stream in some codec that will be usable by any media player right out of the box. And I said to him, no.
There isn't.
No. And by any media player, we're talking Windows Media Player or, you know, like Windows or OS X, because you don't have this problem on the Linux side, so to speak. Because you still...
VLC and mPlayer play everything, pretty much.
But the problem is, by default, you get a Windows machine, you get Windows Media Player. You get Apple, you get QuickTime. Now, those two technologies...
Which are already two different codecs right there.
Right. They don't... Like, the H.264, the MPEG-4, that QuickTime broadcaster will stream and be picked up by QuickTime, won't work under Windows Media Player. And I don't know a codec that we could stream out of that thing that works in Windows Media Player. Everything we've tried never works. It always says, well, you need to download a plugin. You click to download a plugin. You can't find a plugin you need to download. And we tried, so you got to get QuickTime on Windows Media Player. But QuickTime for Windows Media Player doesn't support some of the same codecs that the QuickTime for Apple does, like the H.264 MPEG-4. I'm not sure if that's out yet, but, you know, you got to upgrade to the latest version. And again, I'm not sure even the latest one on Windows supports it. That's a pain in the ass. Is there a codec that is available right out of the box to be used by Windows Media Player and by QuickTime? I'm not worried about the OS or the Linux side because, you know, most of the codecs do work.
I have no clue.
We're talking video codec. I'm sorry. I should say video.
DivX XVid.
Well, DivX XVid, they don't work out of the box with Windows or OS X. You still have to download a plugin, and we're trying to avoid having to have people do that. Such is life.
You can't encode it into a WMV or a straight AVI file or something?
Well, AVI is just a container for whatever underlying format. The problem is it won't be picked up.
Like MPEG-1 or MPEG-2, those are standard, right?
Right, but I'll try that, but it just seems like you do that and a media player doesn't want to pick it up. It wants to download a plugin. Is it 10:30? Bye-bye, Bin Rev.
It is that time.
Bye-bye, Bin Rev.
But, yeah, so it's...
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Something to think about. If you have any advice, any... But, you know, we're also hampered on the fact that they're using QuickTime Broadcaster to pull the video in and send it to the streaming server.
Yeah, they want you to use the Apple stuff.
Well, of course. I know they want you to use the Apple stuff. Why can't they all just use Theora?
Why can't we all just get along?
To hell with them.
Man, remember when we were doing that, trying to convert that codec using mPlayer to work on Windows Media Player, and it was such a pain in the ass? Oh, it was the video capture stuff. Remember that? Screen capture. Mm-hmm. That was such a pain. Any last words?
Thanks for listening. Play us out, Dan.
Okay.
Dum, 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 dum.
Who do we got next week for a guest?
Me.
You gonna just go on a 2-hour diatribe?
Video codecs.
You gonna go out and do a 2-hour Dan's rant?
Yeah, I haven't done one of those in a long time. Ah, the days.
When you had something to rant about.
Yeah.
What do we got next week? Let me pull up the calendar. We've got... Getting there. Rick Timmis from Adaptive Linux Solutions from the UK. Rick is talking to us in the middle of the night. Should be cool. And then week after that, we got Dirk Hondell from Intel. That should be good, too. Good stuff. Link, your security monkey guy.
Yeah, we got to get him on.
Yes, we do. Maybe we can put him on the 12th if we don't have anything set up.
Yeah, I'd like to speak with him.
Good possibility.
Bastard.
Some good stuff.
I can't get to bed early at night because I spend too much time reading his case files.
Reading his...
Hey, what's up with Faber buying a freaking Apple iPad?
Yeah. Laying into him. Oh, I want to listen to podcast. But don't you listen to our show?
Faber's one of the guys from our local lug.
How dare
he? And he posted on the mailing list that he wants to buy an iPod, and Dan just blew a gasket right then and there.
So if he's going to buy an iPod, he better buy that damn case to go with it.
$99 case.
Yeah. You bastard.
No, the bastards are Apple who freaking want to sell that to you.
I'm going to play us out of here. Thank you very much, everybody. What we're closing up with is a song called Never Die from a band called Place of Skulls.
Yes, Judo submitted this one.
Yes, and hope you enjoy. We all enjoy. Alan will.
Always.
And Link will, but he won't be able to hear it until he listens to the podcast. Here we go. Watch it be like 30 minutes long.
shut up.
What?
Just shut up.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.
Wahoo, huh?